you're here. Fellowship sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you.
Welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends. It's November 13th, 2012. Well, as mentioned yesterday, if you tuned into the broadcast, we were going to continue our conversation. So thanks for staying with me, Ernest and Helen and Wanza, and being available so we can get today's edition, the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends, available and archived for our listeners. If you missed yesterday's broadcast, I invite you to go to our website, greatnewsradio.org, and you can listen on our archive programs page. You may know a veteran, you may know somebody throughout the country, or for that matter, throughout parts of the world. And you can paste the link of the program into an email and send it to them and say, hey, click on this link. And as long as they have their speakers tuned in, they can listen to the program. And I think you'll be really blessed and encouraged. But if I could do a quick summary now, I didn't take any notes. I mean, I was just listening. I was engaged. I was fascinated by so much of your story, Ernest. And then even you, Helen, in your late 70s, to have a crush on this 80-year-old Ernest. And the word got out. And next thing you know, you're kind of dating and married. So I'm just intrigued that here are two lovebirds. You know, you're in your mid-80s, and Ernest, you'll be 92 in February. But I was encouraged by that. I was encouraged by the testimony, Ernest, of your family, your folks, especially your dad, born in like 1880s, which is like, wow, 1880s. I mean, that's a long time ago. But how he was kind of old school. Many of us with older dads or those in the generations of the early 1900s or early 20th century, that oftentimes they showed their love just by their discipline, by their hard work ethic, by their care, but oftentimes didn't verbalize it. I think there's a lot of men that I know that really never heard the word, I love you, from their dad. It just seemed to be that was something that didn't go out too often. So let me maybe qualify a couple things. Men, if you have children, over and over again, let them know you love them, not just through your action, but verbalize it. Us children, kids need to hear that they're loved. But you, thank you, God, got to read some letters and some things that he wrote down that really ministered to you and conveyed his great love for you. But you also conveyed a number of journal entries that recounted your POW experience. You served in World War II. You were a pilot. And yesterday's program, we talked about where you got your degree at the University of Illinois. You had an interest in flying. You had your own plane. And you shared some of your life story of growing up, 6 years old. A tornado came through your town. This is back in like 1927 or something, right? I think you mentioned. You had two hired workers that fell on top of you to protect you. And at that point, you knew God was kind of covering you, keeping you around. I think there was another tornado later on in your life, times where you were shot down, you were floating in the North Sea. Let's start today's program. You've enlisted to be a pilot in World War II. It's 1943. And maybe take us from that point into your experience at World War II and even being captured and being a POW for 8 or 9 months, a little less than a year.
Well, of course, after I was in cadets and was inducted in March of 43, we started classification center and just decided whether you'd be a pilot, navigator, or bombardier. And, of course, there's thousands of us at San Antonio. And, of course, the first time I thought I went through college, but I really didn't know what some of the other side of life was like to hear people talk. I mean, talk. I mean, in San Antonio, I couldn't believe my ears.
You know, yeah, because you grew up in a farm at the age of 16. I didn't mention this, but you had a preacher evangelist come in. You heard a fire and brimstone message, and you said, boy, I don't want to be on the side of going to hell. So you kind of entered into that time of beginning your faith journey and following Jesus. Now, this talk, is it because like foul mouth talk? Because you're growing up in a farm, you're somewhat sheltered. And you know.
Yeah, very much so, because they talked about things that I never even heard of, what was going on. And here I went through 4 years of college and yet didn't know all the things that you do here. But I went to chapel every Sunday that I could go at all. Sometimes training interfered. But I didn't lose my religion, and I'd always try to pick a friend that had same results, I mean, same thoughts.
Sure, sure.
And I was able to find it, and somebody said, when you go to the Army, you go to hell. But I could find heavenly people in the Army and the Air Force, just like you do at home.
And so you're training, and then when were you first sent overseas?
Well, I, of course, got my wings in January of 44. I was assigned to a B-17 crew in Salt Lake City, Utah, and got my training at Sioux City, Iowa, and then went overseas in May of 1944. And I was a little concerned about how they speeded up the training, kind of those last months of training. And what I found out later was that they were getting us ready to get us overseas for D-Day. They figured it'd be a bloodbath that day, and so they got us over there just in May 24th of 1944. And, of course, D-Day was December 6th. But I didn't fly that day. I was still on training. But I was there.
Take us through maybe your mindset, because you're in harm's way. I mean, you know, there's all these reports coming in. You know, there's death and what happens with war. How are you resolving that in your mind with God? Like, why am I having to be in harm's way?
Well, I read the Bible, kept the Bible with me, and, of course, went to chapel when we wasn't flying. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was no problem for me. I felt like I had a job to do. It wasn't any spectacular thing. I prayed every day, but I was not scared to the point that I was going to not fly or say I didn't like who we bombed or why we bombed, but we looked at it as a job that had to be done, mm-hmm. like it or not.
Mm-hmm. And was there a sense of we're the good guys? I mean,
we're
providing freedom, liberation.
That was the feeling. We were the good guys. They were the bad guys. And yet I met some Germans, even as a prisoner, that were good guys, a lot of them.
How did you end up becoming a POW?
Thought I had a crew to fly with, but they put me with a new crew. I've only been in the mission 6 months. Well, second mission, they hadn't even been over to Germany yet. And they were very, very nervous. And so I was trying to calm them down as we went along. And when we first got shot up, we had some problems in the air. The engine shot out, and of course the pilot wanted to feel like that. The other pilot wanted to go back, and he was in charge of the... I was supposed to be the co-pilot, and they were supposed to learn from me, and that's what got me a little bit, because I thought they should listen to me, but instead they wanted to go back home. And just like it sounded to me like a child, said, I want to go home when I don't feel good. Yeah, as far as I was concerned, that was against the rule. We had three engines, so we could stay with the group. No problem for us to go back by ourselves and get shot down. But he persisted, and the navigator said he could find the right course for us to fly, that we would avoid all that flak that shot us, hit us the first time. So we started back, and they ended up over a nest of a town on coastline, and all they had to shoot at was us. And that's what got us, so we ended up in the North Sea. We caught on fire and bailed out. And, of course, that was something. People said, well, why didn't you bail out over the North Sea? Well, the deal was you had fires your rear end. You move. You don't stand there and get burned up. You get take a chance that maybe you might get picked up in the ocean. And that was a chance we took rather than burning to death. But what got me was after I bailed out and looked down in the parachute, the plane was still flying straight and level, still burning. It was on automatic pilot, which I turned on as we left. So I don't know what happened to the airplane, but the Germans didn't even know themselves. But that plane was flying by itself, and here we were floating in the water as my bomb groups coming back. They flew over us. Of course, they couldn't see us down in the ocean. And that was it. But don't think I didn't pray and pray hard and loud and clear.
Now, how many of you were able to bail out? And what kind of plane was this that was on automatic pilot?
It was a B-17.
B-17. Mm-hmm. And where were you? You were over the North Sea.
North Sea. Our target was Bremen. And, of course, the town that shot us up the most was Cuxhaven right on the coast, which in World War I was the home of the dirigibles that bombed England in 1941. But I was lucky. Of course, what got me was the fact that you swim very well in the North Sea or the ocean or the waves. And one of the things I asked the kids when I talked to them, and I talked to a lot of kids in school, you ever been in the ocean? Oh, yeah. I said, you ran out and tried to swim? No. I said, well, I found out that you can't do it very well. I didn't even know what direction I was going. So I was just praying to God for salvation of some kind. But what else can you say and do? Waves dashing over your head. The May West could hardly keep you afloat. I had to take all my clothes on. So it was rather a ticklish situation to be in, struggling for your life and trying to say what you should do and what can you do, and you didn't know what to do. All of a sudden, I seen a stick going across the horizon. That was a stick of a fisherman boat. I was getting hyperthermic when I was getting ready to just give up. And Lord, I just feel, Lord, all I could think about was home. The fields of Illinois.
Yeah.
And the stick showed up, and I almost, somebody shot something into me. I almost jumped out of the ocean and waved my hand, and this boat turned and come towards me and picked me up and pulled me on board to sail. I was exhausted.
And how long had you been in the water?
This is a good question, and I can't really determine it for sure, but I remember looking at my watch as I was coming down in the parachute, and it was 20 minutes after 1. The next time that I remember looking at the watch was 5 o'clock, but by that time I'd been picked up, so I'm considering either 45 minutes or an hour and a half, something like that.
Sure.
Theoretically, in cold weather, you have 15 minutes to live in the North Sea.
All right.
So at least I lived, but the water was cold.
Did any of your other flight crew get picked up?
Yes, 3 others, the other pilot and the navigator and the engineer. What we didn't know, when we first got hit, through lack of communication the wrong way, the crew in the back of the airplane bailed out over the land.
Oh.
And the pilot was a little excited. He said, well, prepare to bail out. And all I heard him say was bail out. I even threw away my way. You see, the guy in the left seat's in charge. Even though I had 18 missions, they only had 2. I thought he should listen to me, but instead he was doing, that's what he did. And so I automatically just followed directions. You obeyed to follow certain rules, and I just automatically peeled off my Mayweather, my helmet, and getting ready to bail out. When he said, the other navigator said, well, what are we bailing out for? I said, yeah, that's a good question. What are we bailing out for? Because I feathered that one engine. So it was a little bit of a commotion, a little indecision between the crew and the commander. So I always felt a little bit disheartened about that thing.
Now, you're picked up by this Fisher boat.
Mm-hmm.
Were you then imprisoned, a POW, right after that, or what was
the
next?
Well, you go through a series of changes. First, they picked me up and took me to the island of Heligoland. And, of course, when they first picked me up, one of the fishermen had a big, sharp knife, and I thought, well, he's going to stab me because I was on the deck. And all he did, he peeled off my heavy clothes, and I made wedges like I'm cutting an apple up, and took me down to Heligoland, where they tried to put us in jail. I was met by a squadron of 6 German airmen at the dock, and they frisked me to make sure I was without shoes, and barefooted through the island, through jail.
And is this winter time?
Thank heaven. And the only reason I'm here today is the fact it was in August of 44.
Okay, August of
44. Warmest time of the year to be in the North Sea. And I admit it's that way.
So you're on the land. You're met by Nazis or the Germans.
Right.
And then taken to, what was the next?
Down through Germany, down to Frankfurt, which is in the southern part of Germany. And this is, of course, an interrogation camp, Stadtlager Glue. And this is where they put you in solitary confinement. And this is when they do the interrogation.
Mm.
One man at a time.
Mm.
Which, to me, was one of the most uninspiring, dreadful time of being a POW. This is one of them. This wasn't the only one. But to be solitary, just after being in combat, being all that nerve tension you're up against, and putting in a cell on bread and water, and no communication with any American at all, and to be asked questions as to why you're a spy and this and that, just kind of got you a little bit. And they were very sharp. They could be a tiger one time and a pussycat the next time. It was very, very sharp on their questioning.
Mm. So that went on for a number of days?
Well, for about a week of that. And then finally he said, come around and said, Thorpe, you're a good soldier. I hope you get back to your loved ones soon. I was so surprised because I thought he was the north end of a horse going south. But that was his job. And I couldn't tell him anything. The second lieutenant, and what got me was he got a great big book out the size of a catalog. And there he had more information about my bomb group and about me than I knew myself.
Hmm.
He already had it before I shot down.
Then where did they take you to a camp after that?
Yes, they took us to a staging camp where they separated the enlisted men from the officers and the sergeants and then sent me to Stalingrad 3, took a 3-day trip across Germany, hoping and scared to death we'd get strafed by our own crew. The Stalingrad 3, which is the home and basis of The Great Escape, which Steve McQueen starred in years ago. And it's pretty realistic because it even shows my own barracks in there.
Hmm. Yeah, when you said Stalag
Stalag Blue 3.
Yeah, I was like, that's what I was starting to think. The great, I probably watched The Great Escape, you know, that was on TV so many times.
And, oh, God. Yeah. And it was pretty, it was an absence of Steve McQueen's motorcycle riding. It was pretty authentic, at least as far as I was concerned, because I was there talking to a guy who actually participated in that escape or tried to.
In case you just tuned in, I have Ernest Thorpe in the studio with me. This is the second day, a continuation of yesterday's conversation. Both these today and yesterday's broadcast are archived at greatnewsradio.org, greatnewsradio.org. There's our archive programs link, and you'll see Ernest's name. And his wife of these past 6 years, Helen, is in the studio with us. And then Uncle Ernest, his niece, Wanza, who I know from church, Wanza Lutz, who lives just north of Dewey. And you, Ernest, you currently, you and Helen live near Wapella or the Clinton area. And so you have our 97.1 FM frequency, nice strong signal over there. Our 102.5 signal just kind of fades out, but you can listen to Great News Radio and let your friends and family know to tune in and hear this broadcast. It does re-air in the evening at 7:30, 2 p.m., but both broadcasts are archived. And in light of Sunday being Veterans Day, Wanza some months back said, do I have anyone special, a veteran, or talk about Veterans Day? And she said, because my uncle, he's a man of great integrity. He's a follower of the Lord Jesus. He's a good man, and he loves God, and she's seen God at work in his life these many years through him recounting his story of captivity, of serving in World War II. So, Wanza, before this broadcast today, you prayed up our program, and you said some things about Ernest, and you've gotten to see him these many years, and you've seen him process his war experience. He shared with children. He's spoken in schools and churches and for civic organizations, and so he's the real deal, huh?
Indeed he is.
Now, I know we only have a few minutes here closing out, but as a niece of a war veteran, what are some of the ways maybe for us younger generations, some of the ways that we can honor our veterans? What comes to mind, ways that we can celebrate the freedoms that we've been given because of these veterans?
Well, I think first and foremost, we need to have a reverence for each and every member of the armed forces and never, ever take their service and sacrifice for granted. Mm-hmm. And along with the freedoms that they have given to us, I think we need to set aside time to say thank you, to recognize their service and sacrifice, and also the sacrifice of their families.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite Uncle Ernest story?
No, not in particular, but I do know that for years I have witnessed this man exhibit high levels of integrity, sincerity, humility, and unselfish benevolence for the well-being of others consistently and repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. And Helen, we're going to give you maybe the last word, but you've been married now for 6 years to Ernest, and
that's
you've
right.
seen him, you know, live out his faith in these later years. I mean, Ernest is going to be 92 in February, and he talked a little bit about his faith story, beginning at a young age and then continuing as he attended church throughout his life and served in many roles through the Methodist Church and in different roles of leading and lay teaching and speaking and studying his Bible and reading Scripture. And I guess in your later years, that's a continued practice, being involved in your church and
yes.
praying to God. And anything else you'd like to close out for maybe our listeners to know about Ernest or some of your faith journey?
Yes, I'd like to tell that while he was captured in the prison camp and in solitary confinement, one of the guards asked him if he had a book that he would like to read. They did have a library there in the prison camp. He said, yes, I'd like to have the Bible. And the guard was quite impressed. He said, yeah, yeah, good. And then another thing about Ernest, when he was in the solitary confinement, which I can't hardly imagine, one thing that helped him keep his faith and his mind was hearing the church bells in the valley every half hour peal. And, you know, he had no way of keeping track of time or anything. But this summer, we got a chance to go to Akron, Ohio, to a reunion of 40 prisoners of war from Stalag Luft 3 from all over the United States. And it was an experience, the best 4 days of my life. We had a couple that drove us over there and stayed with us. And we would kind of go our separate ways and interview some of these men and their wives. And I said to this one man, I said, you know, my husband spent a week in solitary confinement at Stalag Luft. Well, lady, I spent 3 months in solitary. Well, what did you do that was so bad? He said, I told a guard that Hitler was no good. And I said, how did you get out of that? And he said his folks went to the Geneva Convention and convinced him to let him out. But this was amazing to meet with these men.
Of course, another thing, talking in terms of faith and the church and all that, as we was getting ready to, that Sunday morning of April 29th, 1945, we were going to have church outside because we didn't have any chapel. And the first thing we knew, a B-51 flew over and railroad over the camp. And we knew that our forces were close by, but we didn't know how close, and the shooting started, and we were liberated. So we all went to the barracks for shelter, not much to shelter, because it's just wooden building. And while the shooting was going on, I decided if I was going to die, I'd just well die full. So I started eating the ration that I'd saved up, and everybody else started the same thing, and then the shooting stopped. And when the shooting stopped, we went outside, and the not beautiful sight in the world was seeing an American flag go up and the German flag come down. Talk about 100,000 POWs in that camp. And just hear men cry, pray, and cheer. It was a bedlam situation, but that was the day of liberation. And, of course, that was April 29th. And, of course, then July 29th is when I got married the first time. So I just waited 2 months to be caught again.
Well, I know the title of this article about your story, Freedom is Not Free, and we, on behalf of the Great News Radio listeners and our Great News Radio listening family, we thank you for your dedicated service and for providing the freedoms that so many of us can take for granted but don't, hopefully. And thank you for your service for our country. And thank you, Helen, for having your supportive role as a helpmeet and a caretaker and a companion. And then thank you, Wanza, for sharing your Uncle Ernest with us. If you missed a part of today's broadcast or yesterday's broadcast, they are archived at greatnewsradio.org under our archived programs link. So thanks for being available for the Monday and Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends, Ernest.
You're entirely welcome. I'm glad I can be able to say this at this time in my life.
Thank you, Helen.
It's been very nice to be here, and I must tell you that with Ernest's life, I've made 18 100-page index scrapbooks of his and his family's life and his wartime experiences and his seed corn business and all that, and I'm still making on them as he does more activities.
And thank you, Wanza, for being a part of the Monday and Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends.
Thank you, Mark. The privilege is certainly mine.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.